Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. We consider topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative and try to explore whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the Arts Hour, I feature in-depth interviews with local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And for this, the Topic Hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all, with local relevance and global significance. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel that discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways that we engage with the world. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. There's podcasts of all my past shows there, and you can connect with me on social media if you should so wish, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So again, the website is itsaquestionofbalance.com. And also to let you know, just recently we got two new tabs on the website on the homepage, guests and topics up at the top. And if you go to those pages, you'll come to a lot of photographs on both pages, on the guest page, all the individual photographs and descriptions of all the many wonderful guests that we've had. And on the topics page, photos relevant to the topics that we've done. And all you have to do is choose what you want, click on that, it'll take you through to the podcast page. So it's very easy to choose a podcast that you might be interested in that way. So go to itsaquestionofbalance.com if you're interested in seeing what we've covered in the past. Right now on It's a Question of Balance, we're featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. Basically, I just go out and about and stop people who are willing to talk to me apropos of nothing on whatever the week's topic is. I'm always very grateful to people who are up for doing that because sometimes the topics are quite deep, and just to be strolling along and be asked to give your thoughts on something, I do appreciate people doing that. And the idea is that by doing this, it might get us thinking about something that we weren't thinking about before. Just listening to other people's thoughts, whether we agree with them or not, just might clarify our own perspective on something. And I'm not trying to weight opinion equally. I just talk to the people who are willing to talk to me, and I feature all the interviews that I do. So this week, we're going to be thinking about, do we need more than one word for love? And this first came to me as an idea. I was in London and I was walking along the South Bank, which is a sort of very kind of arts oriented area of London on the River Thames. And there was a festival of love going on, and it was based on the seven kinds of love. And apparently I learned that the ancient Greeks had around 30 words to describe love in all its shades and complexities. And they had created this festival around this idea. They had chosen seven of the most powerful words to guide us towards a greater understanding of the emotion which makes the world go round, was the description of the festival. And it went on for 7 weeks. And each week they had different artistic installations and events going on, exploring the different kinds of love. And I thought it was really interesting. And the seven kinds of love that they chose were agape, which the love is the love of humanity. selfless love, described by various religious traditions as charity in Christian tradition or universal loving kindness in Theravada Buddhism, and the kind of love which makes us sorrowful when we hear of a crisis in another nation or our own, that makes us give our time or money to charity and makes us feel connected to people that we don't know simply on the basis of our shared experience as human beings. So that kind of love was called agape, the love of humanity. I apologize in advance for my pronunciation of some of these Greek words. If they're incorrect, I'm going to do my best. The next one is storge, S-T-O-R-G-E, which is family love, the love a parent has for a child or a child has for a favorite aunt or uncle, the love a foster parent feels for the children in her care, and the love a grandparent feels for the child adopted by his son and daughter-in-law, for example. So that's storge, family love. And these are the definitions as utilized at this Festival of Love in London. The next love was pragma, love which endures. And this is the kind of love between a married couple, which develops over a long period of time, the love which endures in sickness and in health, the love which makes a friend care for their former school friend, perhaps, who's become vulnerable in later life. So that's pragma. The next one is philautia, or self-respect, and that's P-H-I-L-A-U-T-I-A. And that's the love we give to ourselves, and it's not vanity like narcissism, but it's a joy in being true to our own values, the strength to take care of ourselves so that we can in turn take care of others. The next one is philia, or shared experience. That's P-H-I-L-I-A. The love we feel for people we strive with to achieve a shared goal. So that might be our co-workers, the players in a sports team, the soldiers in an army. So that's a kind of shared experience love. And then there's ludus, or ludus, L-U-D-U-S, flirting, playful affection. And this refers to the kind of affection between children or young lovers, the feelings we have when we test out what it might be like to be in love with someone, the sort of fluttering heart and feelings of euphoria, maybe that slightly dangerous sensation. And finally, eros, romantic and erotic love. And this is based on sex and powerful magnetism. And it's the one that they say which can get us into the most trouble. It can turn into other kinds of love, like pragma, but it starts as romance and attraction. So there's seven kind of mainstays of Greek descriptions of love. So what I was interested in asking people this week is, do we need more than one word for love? If we had more words for love, would it make a difference? So let's hear the first person that I spoke to was Zoe. So let's hear what she has to say. Hello, my name is Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
Zoe.
Well, this week, Zoe, we're doing Do We Need More Than One Word for Love in Out and About? Human relationships are complex and come in many forms. We have feelings for others which differ depending on the unique circumstances. However, in the English language, there's only one word to describe this, which is love. And the Greeks had more than one word. They had about 30, and the main ones being love of humanity, family love, love which endures, self-respect, deep friendship, playful affection, and sexual passion. So that gives you an idea of how they were kind of categorizing different kinds of love. First of all, how would you define love? Not an easy question, I know.
No. Well, it's a feeling. It's just a feeling of connection, closeness.
I know when I was trying to define it for myself, I was thinking, if I ask people this, I have to try and define it. And I was thinking, part of it, I think, is caring for someone before yourself. I mean, not in a doormat way, but do you know what I mean? It's a kind of selfless type of emotion and kindness and compassion and an impetus to want to give good things to somebody, or I don't know. It is quite hard to define, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it is very helpful. It would be very helpful to have more than one word. There are different. They're definitely different. Love can take on different roles and different situations with different people, and
One of the love words that they had meant love that endures, because they saw that as different to eros, which is more of a sort of fiery sexual passion kind of love. And so that love that endures would be something that would last, say, through a long relationship or a marriage or something like that. And one of the things I was wondering is if we had these ideas of these different kinds of love, whether it would help us in relationships to sort of pick apart more what we're feeling and whether it's appropriate in certain situations. Do you think that?
I think that would be helpful, yes.
Yeah. I mean, are you aware of feeling different kinds of love, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, one would be sexual attraction, and another is a, you know, a love that, that enduring love where it's something that's developed over many years with friends, or a partner, or, you know,
And they also had, I'm trying to find my list here, a kind of love that was with, they had a family love, storge, which is for the family. Where's the one I was looking for? Oh, philia it was called, which is a love that comes through shared experience. So people that we've strived to achieve a shared goal with, which might be our co-workers or our players in a team, or originally maybe soldiers, you know, in a unit together or whatever.
Camaraderie.
I get
that too, you know, the sense of excitement in a shared experience. That definitely brings people close together. I would say the overarching word is closeness and connection, for love. I mean, I think I'm still gonna stick with that as my sort of overarching, definition.
One of the things that started me thinking about this is because we just have this one word, and therefore in some way it has to have a massive weight to it, because it is sort of like the highest human emotion. Whether it prevents us from connecting as much. For instance, I saw an article on LinkedIn about somebody, a consultant, was saying the core business value should be "I love you." Now, to many people, that would seem ridiculous, like in business. And he was talking about respect, you know, but the core value, he did say, should be "I love you." So I was just wondering if we had another word, such as agape was one of the Greek words for sort of love for humanity or something, or even the philia one, the shared experience, whether that would enable us to have deeper feelings in contexts which we don't allow ourselves to connect in because we don't think of it in that way, if you see what I mean.
Right. Meaning. So, if we see a business telling us they love, you know, we love our customers. Is that kind of what you're saying? Like, we love our customers, or you'll see at the bottom of a product, on a package that says "made with love" or something like that, right?
Right.
That we should maybe differentiate, have a different word. You mean? Is that what you're?
Well, actually, that's a different thing that I was thinking. I mean, I think yes, if we had a different idea of what love could be, if we saw that on packaging, then we wouldn't feel so cynical about it. I think we tend to feel cynical if we see love in different contexts,
right?
Because we then think, well, that's not really love.
Right.
You know what I mean? But maybe
because
is.
It's like this. Well, for me, it's a feeling of like, well, you don't know me, so how can you say you love me?
Right.
So there's that part of it is that I need to feel known. I need to feel, you know, intimately known, right?
Yeah.
To really accept that you love me, and vice versa. That's interesting.
Yeah, and then the other thing, of course, was, you know, fairly recently Hillary Clinton made a statement that she would like to see more love and kindness in politics. And again, I think because of how we define love, you know, there's a sort of cynical reaction to that. You know, well, she's wishy-washy, or, you know, God, how can you have love in politics? So, again, you know, whereas if we had more of an understanding of different shades of love that come with respect and honoring each other as human beings, I'm just wondering whether it would allow us to feel more and maybe even treat each other better. I don't know.
I think so. I think that's great.
And it seems odd that we have so many words for, like, in England we have so many words for rain, for instance,
right,
or like different kinds of coffees, and yet we just have this one word for love. It's kind of limiting.
It is.
Finally, Aristotle believed that the basis of all love was that we first love ourselves. Mm. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on self-love.
Self-love, yeah. Well, so I've done a lot of thinking on that. And what I've come to, what makes more sense to me is self-knowledge, know thyself.
Mm, right,
Because I find it's very difficult. It's much easier for me to love others when I know myself and I know my needs. And I respect myself.
Mm, yes.
And I respect those needs. It's all goes together. And I do think that's a really important component. And also not to get too self-absorbed and too self-centered, so that we end up separating ourselves from others. We end up avoidant. You know, that's I think that can take it to the extreme. So yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So self-awareness is key, but I guess also if we accept ourselves, then that allows you to accept others more readily too, doesn't it?
Yeah, and for them, and you're just automatically more attractive when you're centered in yourself and you accept yourself and you know yourself. Then people see that and they say, oh, you are lovable. Look
That's
at you.
True.
You know, and it just works. I find that it works that way. And yes, I think it is extremely important to start with yourself.
So there's a benefit not only in being able to love better, but you're more likely to get love as well.
And always coming from a place of just, I am loved, you know. I have this, you know, I have this between me and myself. It's you know, checking ourselves when if we start to reach outside for that, you know. Give me love. Oh, you give me love. Oh, I need it. And just to be aware of that. And of course we need each other. We need that connection. Mm. Absolutely.
Yes.
As one of my favorite teachers says, my relationship teachers, he says, we are pack animals. We need each other. Just we are relational creatures. Just not neglecting that love of self and that ongoing journey of self-discovery is so crucial.
And perhaps differentiating, I mean, it's semantics, but between desire and need, like you're saying, you know, you don't need it in a way that you can't get on without it, because that's a sort of codependent kind of love, isn't it?
But
to have a desire to be with others and have relationships, I think, is a very human desire. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts.
You.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and our topic discussion this week. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversations from other people that I spoke to on the street after these few messages. Thanks again, as I said, to everybody who is willing to stop and talk to me. And hopefully you listeners are also getting an idea of what you might think about this topic and whether you think it's useful to have different kinds of love or not. So we are going to go to some messages now.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
About you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, babe, it just goes nowhere.
Who
there's more to us than just that.
It's a question of balance music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com. Santa Cruz artist Doreen Davis states, "I become one with the essence of nature. This process puts me in touch with the soul of all living things." Owners of Doreen's beautiful paintings can vouch for this truth. Gazing at a painting by Doreen Davis simultaneously enlivens and soothes the soul. Working predominantly in watercolor, but also in acrylic and oil, Doreen's floral and landscape paintings have appeared in many exhibitions and are in private collections throughout the United States, in England, and in Germany. Her paintings are on display online at DoreenDavis.com and experience the visual delight of being at one with nature through her paintings.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second-generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Just to remind you, It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour. Right now, we're featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. And if you have any thoughts about our topic discussion this week, do email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'm always interested to hear your thoughts. Again, that's ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, the next conversation I had was with Astro and Tom. So let's hear what they have to say. Hi, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Tom.
Astro.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week I'm thinking about, do we need more than one word for love? Human relationships are very complex, with feelings we have for other people differ depending on the unique circumstances. However, in English, we only have one word to describe that, which is love. Whereas the Greeks had 30, seven of which are the main ones, which include agape, the love of humanity, storge, family love, pragma, love which endures, philotia, self-respect, not know if I'm pronouncing these correctly, philia, shared experience, ludos, which is flirting, playful affection, and eros, romantic or sexual passion. So I'm just wondering first, it's quite hard to define, but can you define what you think of as love? Or is that too tricky? It's quite a hard first question. Yeah, maybe I can let you think about it. Do you consider yourselves as loving in different ways, you know, having different kinds of love? Do you think about that, or do you just tend to think of love as one thing in your life?
I'm going to say that... Can I say both, which you'll probably hear repeatedly from in the interview? Yeah, so I think that there's a stable and common attitude that you have, that I have in love, and that I try to demonstrate in both family relationships and romantic relationships and towards other people in general. But then there's, you know, the details of those relationships are also important.
Right, yeah. What about you? Are you aware of having different kinds of love?
No, I try not to think in concepts.
Okay.
So
are you just not thinking? Are you just feeling?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and not putting a label.
right?
Yeah, so, yeah. Yep.
I guess one of the reasons I'm asking this question is because in our society there seems to be quite a high bar for love, and I'm wondering if we had more kinds of love on the table to choose from, whether we would feel more comfortable expressing it and connecting with people more. For instance, I just read on LinkedIn a business consultant talking about the main core value of business is I love you. Now, a lot of people would cynically think that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, but we're in the healing various medical communities, and yeah.
Right. So, but if we had this idea of these different kinds of love, such as philia, which is a kind of shared experience from a shared goal that you have with people in the team or co-workers, I'm just wondering whether it would allow us to open up a bit more and connect more. What do you think?
Yeah.
You do? Why?
I mean, yeah, the worry that you're expressing is somehow that you use this one word that has all these other connotations and you want to use it for one specific thing, and then all these other connotations come up in people's minds and trouble ensues. Is that, that's the worry, right?
Kind of, yeah. Like, you know, when Hillary Clinton said there should be love, more love and kindness in politics, well, a whole swathe of people are going to think, oh, that's just ridiculous. You can't have love in politics. You know what I mean? Because we think of love in just this one way. But if we thought of love in more ways, and love could mean respect and, you know, even compassion, how you treat people, would it allow us to express emotion more? I don't know. What do you think? Would it allow you to? Or are you feeling okay in your love position?
Are you feeling okay in your love position? That's the question. I think that you are based on this interview. So I'm going to say, I mean, the other words, I mean, bringing in lots of other words into our language is probably a difficult
at this point
thing to do. Yeah. But I would say, like, you know, reading your little list there is kind of interesting. I'd take that list with me and maybe look at it and some of the different ones. Yeah, I could maybe pick up some different words. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
so yes, I will adopt more, in particular, the Greek words for love. I would like to incorporate more of the Greek words for the varieties of love into my experience, because I think about these things.
Okay.
And then I endeavor to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I read them, I thought, oh, I do feel these different things. I just hadn't thought about it in this way. And I thought that it probably was helpful. One of the things I thought might be interesting to disentangle was sexual love and the love that endures, pragma, because, you know, we are quite in our society now, you know, that sort of eros is desirable, but actually the Greeks were quite scared of eros because they thought it was very sort of unpredictable and out of control. And so I don't know, if we had more awareness in those areas, maybe it would help us to choose long-term partners better. I don't know. I'm speculating here, but I think we feel all these different kinds of loves, but we just don't think of it in this way. I'm just wondering if it was more out there, whether it would allow people perhaps to feel less repressed or less judgmental. What are your thoughts?
So the proposal is actually to just add some more new words, and then that will do it. Or,
I don't know. I'm just starting a discussion, making people think about it.
Yeah, I mean, clearly words matter.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we have, how many words do we have for coffee? You know,
Eskimos, like snow, or like in Britain.
We have so many words for rain.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with an unequivocal yes. Thinking more about love and about sex and, like I said, the affections you have for coworkers or for friends and for family, and the relationship between those that you have for your romantic partners is a good thing.
Okay.
More words, more thinking about it, more talking about it on the street and on radio shows. It's all good.
Okay. Finally, Aristotle believed that the basis of all love was that we first love ourselves. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on self-love. Not the euphemism kind, but real self-love. Loving yourself. Do you think that is a prerequisite for loving other people? Or at least it's better if you know how to love yourself?
in some of these senses and not in others, right? It depends on which one you're talking about.
Which love are we talking about? That's a good question. He's putting you on the spot.
In some, clearly not.
Really? Which ones?
Yeah, give me the list again.
Okay, hang on.
Probably romantic and erotic love. It's not necessary to...
Okay.
And
I guess why? Why do you think? Because you could love someone else and hate yourself, but you could still give love to somebody.
And the opposite of that love is not hate, right? So you think of the opposite of love as hate. Well, it's not clear that any of these senses of love have hate as an opposite.
No. Okay. So maybe we call it self-acceptance. Yeah. Do you think it's important to have a sense of accepting yourself in order to be able to love people fully?
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting. Fully being in all of these ways. Or...
Yes or no, depending on how you want to answer it. But I guess yes, if we're saying any way, you need to have a level of self-acceptance.
Well, definitely for this one, Philautia.
Okay, self-respect.
Because that just is, yeah, by definition.
You can't give it to others if you haven't got it for yourself. Yeah. Okay. What about you? Do you think it's important to love yourself?
You know, I don't, because people, I have done social work in the past,
okay,
and
right.
I suppose engaged in some loving.
Okay.
A fair amount. So I don't, I've been asked the question before about people about whether you love yourself, and despite all the loving that I've done, and even the thought that I've had about loving myself is not a thought that I have really had, or a question that I've had towards myself. I imagine, do you ever think about, like, oh, do I love myself?
Mm.
Like, it's never a thought that occurs, but you do think, do I love other people, or something like this?
Mm.
Yeah, so...
Maybe that's because you do, because if you have a lot of self-loathing, then you do think about it more. Or if you have a lot of negative voices in your head that are saying you're useless, you'll never succeed, you'll never do this, you know, you're pathetic, then you've got a constant sort of attack on your self-perception. So maybe it's because you two are very well balanced.
I've definitely had some negative voices. It's also because of what I think. Sometimes I don't even know if, like, I want to love myself, because I associate, like, sometimes I think a harsh attitude towards oneself, sort of seeing where you fall short of an ideal, mm. and you know, striving to achieve it is a good attitude to have. But to answer,
oh, I see. Yes, yeah.
You know,
like,
and that
motivates you to.
I don't
be
know
a
what
person.
That may be. You know, compatible
right.
with love, maybe, so long as you don't wholeheartedly reject the person that you are.
Yes. Yeah.
Or the other person, that you sort of, you know, accept them and then sort of push them to do something else.
Yeah.
But to answer the question, do I think that loving yourself is a requirement for loving someone else? I'm going to say yes.
Okay. What about you?
Well, only in some senses.
Only in some senses. Okay. I know someone I just...
asked and we disagree.
Yeah, sorry. It's confusing.
Can we ask you? I think it's a conversation. That's against the rules of etiquette.
What do you want to ask me?
Is loving someone else a requisite? I think you're going to say yes. Is loving someone else a requisite for... Oh, no. Loving yourself a requisite for loving someone else.
I was thinking about this when I wrote the question, actually. And I think that... I think you are able to give love most fully if you do love yourself. If you have more to give, if you have come to a place of peace within yourself and accept yourself. However, it is possible to love people and not love yourself. Lots of people do it.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say is, I think if you're in that kind of dynamic, you often find yourself in a situation that can be codependent or maybe even destructive, where you really love somebody, but maybe they don't feel the same about you, or they don't care about you in the same way.
Mm.
So that's one element of it. I don't know if that really totally answers
fully
the question.
To, like, best and fully love someone, you do.
Yeah, and I think that if to love ourselves, I mean, you know, in the Bible it says, love thy neighbor as thyself. And, you know, a lot of people don't interpret that as meaning we should love ourselves. They just assume we do, and therefore you should love your neighbor as much as you already love yourself.
Mm.
But, of course, a lot of people actually don't love themselves. So,
of the Bible, did Jesus love himself?
I would say so, yes.
Oh, you would?
Yes. Yeah, because I think we also...
He was very hard on himself, right?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
But I also think that we think of...
allowing yourself to be crucified, probably. Or maybe that's actually...
Did Socrates?
Yeah, it's an act of love for himself or for other people.
Yes, I mean,
it's
of course.
It's an act of love for humanity, right? But is it an act of self-love? Well, only as part of humanity, maybe.
I mean, yeah, that's a whole other discussion. I mean, I think Jesus embodied love, so it, yeah. But I definitely, I think it's as important to love ourselves as it is to love other people. Somebody I interviewed said that she thought you were more likely to get love if you love yourself because you're more appealing.
You've got that swagger.
One of these loves too, right?
Sorry?
You're talking about a particular one of these loves in that case.
Yes, yeah, I think she was talking
about the last one.
Eros or maybe pragma. I don't know.
I mean, pragma?
Enduring love, like it was married couple or whatever. Yeah. But you probably have to engender Eros before you get the pragma,
maybe.
So... Anyway, I really appreciate you talking to me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that was our pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, our topic discussion this week. Thanks there to Astro and Tom. And we were talking lastly there about self-love. And I was looking at something that I... got from the Internet Encyclopedia of Philosophy, and it said the first condition for the highest form of Aristotelian love is that a man loves himself. Without an egoistic basis, he cannot extend sympathy and affection to others. Such self-love is not hedonistic or glorified, depending on the pursuit of immediate pleasures or the adulation of the crowd. It is instead a reflection of his pursuit of the noble and virtuous, which culminate in the pursuit of the reflective life. So that would also play into what Zoe was saying earlier about self-awareness being definitely part of what it means to love oneself. Anyway, we're going to go to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Did you know about the Santa Cruz Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz? Founded in 1919, it's 96 years young and provides a wonderful gallery space for local and national artists. It's a great place to view art with 14 shows a year and also to gain support if you're an artist yourself. There are art classes and weekend workshops, many taught by open studio artists. If you become a member, you receive a newsletter, discounts on classes, gifts and exhibit entries, images of your art on the Art League website, and guaranteed participation in the annual members show. It's also a great place to meet artists. Visit the Santa Cruz Art League at 562 Broadway or the website at scal.org. That's scal.org.
Ciao. I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And if you're new to the show, It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and an arts guest hour. Right now we're featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. But we also have wonderful arts guests, which you can check out along with all the topics we've discussed. The website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, and do email me with any thoughts you have. Ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. Always very interested to hear your thoughts. So that's Ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. So this week we're considering, do we need more than one word for love? And I found an interesting article online by the philosopher Roman Krishnarik. It's on yesmagazine.org. It's the ancient Greek six words for love and why knowing them can change your life. And it's based on Roman Krishnarik's book, How Should We Live? Great Ideas from the Past for Everyday Life. So I'm indebted for the following from his article and also from his book, which based on the article, I would think would be very interesting. So maybe you would like to check that out. And he has six words. You might remember that before the Festival of Love that I came across in London, they had picked out seven words. So he's missed out. He hasn't made storge, the love between parents and children, as a separate love. But he mentions eros to start with. But he prefaces it by saying that the Greeks would have been sort of horrified by the crudeness in using a single word, both to whisper, I love you, over a candlelit meal, and also to casually sign an email, lots of love. So to them, that would have been really peculiar to not differentiate and use the same word for those things. He's also interested in this topic because he feels that we have an addiction in our current society to romantic love, you know, to finding a unique soulmate who can satisfy all our emotional needs. And he's speculating if we were more aware of different kinds of love, maybe we would find out that we have more love in our lives than we actually think. You know, if we don't have a partner right now, we might realize, oh, well, actually, we have all these other kinds of love. So he talks about eros, or sexual passion, named after the Greek god of fertility, and that the Greeks didn't always think of it as something positive because they saw it as dangerous and fiery and an irrational form of love that could take hold of you and possess you, which was an attitude shared by many later spiritual thinkers such as the Christian writer C.S. Lewis. So people are a bit worried about where eros might lose people, whereas these days we tend to think that falling madly in love is a good thing. Then there's philia, or deep friendship, which the Greeks valued far more than sexuality, represented by eros. It was a kind of comradely friendship that developed between brothers in arms who fought beside each other on the battlefield. For instance, it was about showing loyalty to your friends, sacrificing for them. And he's saying, you know, maybe it's worth considering how much of that we have in our lives now when we have this temptation to amass loads of friends in inverted commas on social media. He said these achievements would hardly have impressed the Greeks. And then there's ludus or ludus, playful love, which refers to the affection between children or young lovers. And that can also refer to the sort of flirting and teasing in the early stages of a relationship. But it could also be, you know, sort of bantering and laughing with friends in a bar, going out dancing, a sort of playfulness that isn't necessarily about sex. And it says that today, you know, social norms may frown on this kind of sort of adult frivolity, but, you know, maybe it would spice up our lives a bit to engage a bit more in that. And then there is agape, which is love for everyone, radical, selfless love that you extended to all people, whether they were your family or distant strangers. And it was later translated in Latin as caritas, which is the origin of our word charity. And C.S. Lewis again referred to it as gift love, the highest form of Christian love. And this author is saying, Roman Krishnarik, that there's growing evidence that agape is in dangerous decline in many many countries. Certainly, empathy levels have seriously declined in the US over the past 40 years, which I have covered in previous shows. I'm not sure exactly why, but he is saying, Roman Krishnarik, we urgently need to revive our capacity to care about strangers. So I think thinking about agape, love for humanity, is something that we would probably all benefit from pondering on. And then there's pragma, or long-standing love, or a mature love, which develops over time, you know, maybe through making compromises to help a relationship work, showing patience and tolerance. And Krishnarik says that the psychoanalyst Eric Fromm said that we expend too much energy on falling in love and need to learn more how to stand in love. And I think that's very relevant to our society today. When I read that, I was like, wow, that's quite profound. And pragma is just about that. It's about standing in love, making an effort to give love and maintain love rather than just receive it. And then lastly is philautia, which I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but love of the self. And the Greeks realized that there were two types of this. There was the unhealthy variety associated with narcissism, where you became self-obsessed and focused on your own desires, and then a healthier version enhanced, which enhanced your wider capacity to love. So I think that's quite interesting too, because there's also been an increase on college campuses in the last 10 years in narcissism, which I've discussed in a previous show also. So, you know, maybe it would be interesting to think about philautia or self-love to see whether we are just self-obsessed or whether we are healthily thinking well of ourselves. So let's hear the last conversation that I had on this topic this week, and that was with Mike. Let's hear what he had to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
My name is Mike.
Well, thanks, Mike, for stopping for my Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at, do we need more than one word for love? Human relationships are very complex. The feelings we have for other people differ depending on the unique circumstances. And yet we only have one word for that in English, which is love. Whereas the Greeks had many words, the main ones being love of humanity, family love, love which endures, self-respect, deep friendship, playful affection, and sexual passion. So I'm wondering, do you consider yourself as loving in different ways? Do you think of different kinds of love in your own relationships?
I'm not sure if I see myself in loving in those, but I probably use the word love only because that's all that's available. I love the new pair of shoes that I bought, but I don't know if I see that the same way as I love my wife or my family or
right,
where I live.
Yes. Well, that's one of the things that I'm thinking about, is whether it would enable us to connect in more ways or express feelings in more ways. Because we only have one word for love, it's sort of quite a high bar, you know, for what that is. And so if it's used in different circumstances, either it's diminished, like you're saying, like I love my shoes, so it's sort of meaningless, or it feels inappropriate maybe in certain circumstances. I mean, for instance, the Greeks had a word, philia, which was one of their words for love, which was about shared experience. So it was a kind of love you could feel for maybe your co-workers or members of your sports team, or back in, well, even today, you know, soldiers in an army or something. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel it could help us to express more connection if we felt love could have different forms?
Maybe. maybe it would. I don't know. But I would say it's definitely been diminished. I think the word has been diminished for sure.
Right.
But yeah, maybe it would. Maybe it'd be a lot less misunderstandings.
Yeah. I mean, if you hear love in certain contexts, like I saw a business article that said the main core value of business should be I love you. What's your response to that?
No.
Okay. Why?
I thought it was either for a profit or to provide me with a service or a whatever. I don't necessarily want to love that. I just want whatever the nature of that relationship is. Yeah, but it's not. I wouldn't put it in a love or maybe like is okay. But
I mean, I think what they were thinking of is more in managerial structure, you know, sort of how you deal with your employees and with each other and the structure within the company. But it seems odd, doesn't it, to us to think about love being in that context because we just have this one word, do you think?
Yeah, but I suppose that depends on your relationship with work. Mine is work is to only provide you with something else. Work is to put a roof over your head and to food in your belly and for your family, and then that's where work ends.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned. But, yeah. You know, I mean, I know other people, that's their life. Life is their work, and that's important for people like that as well, so.
One of the other things I was wondering is whether if we had an idea of different sort of shades of love, whether that would help us to have more successful relationships. For instance, they had a word pragma, which is love which endures, which develops over a long period of time. So yeah. It would be perhaps friendships or marriages or whatever,
yes.
As opposed to sort of eros, which is romantic or erotic love, which they actually thought of as quite dangerous because it was unpredictable. And I'm just wondering if we had more of a sense of those different kinds of love, whether it would help us choose better partners or be more realistic about how relationships work. I don't know.
Or more words that I'm just going to have to try to remember and communicate to my wife when.
More complex, yes. More of women you won't understand.
I guess probably from the guy's point of view, or it's probably better to leave it in one word. Let's
Okay, that's interesting. Finally, Aristotle thought that the basis of all love was that we first love ourselves. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on loving oneself and whether that is a prerequisite for really loving other people.
Yeah, probably. Maybe, I don't know if love would be the right word, maybe respect, but something in that nature. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe,
I would agree
like
with that
100%.
Yeah, definitely.
So it sounds like you have different feelings about different people, but you're not necessarily feeling a need to put a name to those feelings.
Yeah, I think some of the words are maybe not descriptive enough.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah, I think having several different words for it would probably be much more helpful. But I'm probably not the linguist
right.
to come up with those words. So.
No, exactly. I'm not sure I am either.
I can barely speak English, let alone.
Well, that's not evident. Well, I really appreciate your thoughts. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Very nice to meet you. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
Well, that's it for It's a Question of Balance this week. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you for the next Arts Hour.